Great. Can everybody hear me? Good morning. My name is Yavor. I'm a program manager on the Azure Mobile Services team. And we're here today to talk about building customer-facing apps with the cloud. So thank you very much for coming, and I hope you really enjoy the talk today. But before we dive in, can I get a show of hands to see how many of you have actually, let's say, heard of Azure Mobile Services, the product? Okay, all of you have heard. How many, keep your hand up if you've actually tried the quick start, the three steps. Okay, so maybe about 10%. How many of you have gotten authentication working? Okay, two people, three, five people. All right, great. So I think I have a good set of content here for you guys. We'll cover sort of all those areas. So I hope you really find it useful. I should say this talk is really geared more towards building customer-facing apps, not necessarily building employee-facing apps. So if you're a business and your customers are your employees or another company's employees, sort of an internal app as opposed to a public app, there's actually another talk tomorrow that's going to touch. They're going to spend the whole hour talking about that set of scenarios. Today it's more if your customers are just out there on the internet. Social media, etc. Great. So we talk about these customer-facing mobile app, but I wanted to start with an actual example of a customer who's already using Azure Mobile and is already in the store and has already seen some success. Their name is Sleeve Music. They're a Dutch company, and it's really an awesome music experience on Windows Phone, on iOS, and Android is coming soon as well. And what their app lets you do is both discover new music through a set of curated playlists that they update very frequently, and also stay in touch with your favorite artists. They aggregate the social media presence of that artist across a variety of different services, and they bring it to you in one place, so you can go listen to all the music that they post on all these services right in their app. And they've seen some amazing success, and we'll come back to this example later and talk in more detail about some of the choices they made in their design and some of the lessons they learned in using mobile services. So a good example for you guys to learn from. But what's a customer-facing app? Well, it's sort of out there on the store. It's public for everyone. Frequently, it goes out there and aggregates data from the internet. Frequently, it needs to authenticate users. Frequently, it needs to be able to store data offline, even when it's not connected. And so soon, if you start building these capabilities one by one, you sort of end up in a place where you're having to build an ever-increasing set of functionality. And a lot of it is common. If you have more than one app, you end up building it again and again and again. And so we really like to think of Azure Mobile as sort of the one place for the full app lifecycle. So it helps you both in the design phase when you're trying to figure out how to write the code, how to write the backend services, where to host your stuff. The debugging and sort of monitoring phase as you grow, as you expand to maybe 10 or 100 customers, sort of figuring out what's wrong, working through the issues. And also through the engagement phase, which is something new we've added to the platform. And that lets you really take advantage of sort of rich telemetry, monitoring, and segmentation capabilities to improve user engagement with your app once it's in the store. So if you're in the store and no one's using your app, or your customers are giving you one star, you really want sort of these engagement and these engagement tools to be able to deal with that problem. And Azure is sort of a one-stop shop that provides all of them for you. So we'll tackle all three areas today. And so first we'll talk about building mobile apps and how do you do that on the Microsoft Cloud. If you've seen mobile services before, you've probably seen this slide. And this is kind of how we try to categorize all the scenarios that we support in mobile services. So first, if you look on the right side, that's your service. And these are sort of the common scenarios that we see customers working with over and over again. Data storage. Most of our apps today need to store data in the cloud. You're not going to store it on the device, because if the user loses their device or logs in a different device, they need to be able to roam their data. So data storage is in the cloud. And we support a variety of different data stores. So if you have relational data you'd like to put in SQL, we support that. But we also support blob and table storage, and even things like MongoDB. Kind of giving you a lot of options depending on what you like and the sort of the shape of the data your app is using. We also have an exciting new feature called Hybrid Connections, and that actually lets you connect from the cloud to your premises. So you can actually access data that's not necessarily living in Azure. And a lot of the time, there's resistance from customers who don't want to move everything to the cloud, especially not the data. Hybrid Connections is an answer to that, because you can host your mobile service in the cloud, but then keep the data on premises. And the other talk that I mentioned that's tomorrow, they're going to cover that in a lot more detail there, since it's more relevant to sort of the enterprise case. So that's data storage. When it comes to user authentication, we support all the major social providers, so you can easily log in your app's users with their Facebook or Twitter account. We also support Active Directory, again, for that more enterprise-y case that you'll learn more about tomorrow. Last but not least, we have support for push notifications. So if you're familiar with how push notifications works, each of the device vendors actually provides a notification service that's baked into the device. So Microsoft has one, Apple has one, Google has one as well. You can go and try and figure out how to talk to each of them, and they each have a slightly different protocol. Or you could use a service called Notification Hubs that we provide in Azure that lets you send one message to the Notification Hub, and the Notification Hub knows how to fan out that message to all the different devices that are subscribed to it. So it kind of gives you a nice layer for scalability and convenience on top of trying to implement push yourself. So these are sort of the canonical scenarios. Now, when it comes to the programming model, the focus for mobile services is so you don't have to write a lot of code. So a lot of the capabilities that we talk about, data, auth, and push, a lot of that stuff's pretty well fleshed out in the product, and you just usually have to configure it or customize it a little bit, but the bulk of the coding is done for you. If you do need to extend it, we support sort of two programming models. One, sort of for the non-Microsoft-friendly crowd, is based on Node.js, right? So we have people building for the iPhone, and they'll never buy a PC. And so for them, they can use Node.js, which runs everywhere. For the Microsoft crowd, for you guys, you're already familiar with the tools. You love Visual Studio. You love C Sharp. You know Web API. So for you, we enable a programming model based on Web API, on ASP.NET Web API. And so that's what we'll work with today. Of course, the Node.js model is there as well. And if you're interested in it, come talk to me after. And I have an entire version of this slide deck that's done for that developer segment as well. So I have a lot of these demos done for Node.js as well. Then on the client side, we support a variety of client platforms. Of course, all the Windows platforms as well as iOS and Android. In a native way, we support HTML5 in case you want to use it from a responsive web page as well. And then there's a set of tools now that let you sort of do cross-platform development. So you write the code once, and then it compiles it out to all the different platforms. An example is Xamarin and PhoneGap. So Xamarin lets you write C# and then compiles to an iOS app, to an Android app, to a Windows app. PhoneGap does the same, but you write it in HTML and JavaScript, and then it's able to actually render the HTML and JavaScript on the different platforms. So it's kind of a productivity enhancer if you don't have the cycles to go and write a native app for each platform. And we have SDKs for all of these. And the SDKs let you basically take advantage of all these capabilities from the platform of your choice. We also have support for offline sync, and we'll see a demo of that later, for occasionally connected clients. So we're not always on the network. You're going through a train, tunnel, or you're at a customer site and there's spotty Wi-Fi coverage. It's important to be able to save the data on the device and sync it up later when connectivity is present. So that's sort of the overview of the product. Let's drill into that first layer, sort of the data storage layer. We have the mobile device and the mobile service, and the mobile service icon looks like a mobile phone. It really should look like a web service. We've got to talk to our marketing people about that. But the idea is that you're basically exchanging data back and forth between the device and the service, and the service itself is storing data in one of these data stores. We have sort of two parts of the programming model that you'll see in my demo in just a little bit. We have the table controller, which sort of does CRUD data style, CRUD style data access. And that provides basically a simple HTTP JSON-based format for the client to talk to. So table controller is sort of this, you can think of it as sort of a REST protocol. And then we have the domain manager, and the domain manager is tied to a data store. So we have a domain manager for each of the data stores, for SQL, table, Mongo. And the idea is that by plugging in a custom domain manager, your table controller and the wire format stays the same, but you can plug in a different data store. So you can you should be able to pretty easily switch from using one to the other without really disrupting sort of the data flow between your service and the client. So that's sort of the data story in a nutshell, and you'll see all this in the demo. Let's talk about offline. So offline, Microsoft has tried to do that a few times, and I think the last time we attempted to do it, it was a solution where you had to run a Microsoft database on the device and the Microsoft database on the other side as well. And that's clearly very limiting today. You know, we don't have those sort of client databases on all the platforms, and you know, with iOS and Android, there's no reach there for this for Microsoft databases. What does have reach everywhere is SQLite. So SQLite is this sort of very lightweight, as the name says, database format, and it's able to work on all these different devices. So we took a bet on that. We built a fairly thin layer on top of it. And on the server side, it works with any of the data stores I mentioned. So it's not a database-to-database sync in the way that Microsoft has tried to do it before. It's more of a lightweight protocol that any data store can use to sync to put data into SQLite. And if you don't like SQLite or you don't like your data store, our data stores, it's also pluggable. So you can replace the client or replace the service. I think I covered everything here. One important thing to point out is that it's also not magic, right? Sometimes Microsoft tries to do something magical that's going to go in and do sync in the background when it thinks it's best. But we found that it's very hard to really come up with a behavior that works well for everyone in that case. So in this particular case, we said, let's not try and tackle that right away. Let's leave full control to the developer about when you want to sync. So it's explicit, as you'll see in the demo. And you know, it's pretty straightforward. This is the same table controller on the server side that the offline sync engine is talking to. And it's running SQLite on the device, and then we have the ability to do conflict resolution. So that's probably the hardest part of offline, is once you've stored the data locally, if you have two people trying to edit the same record at the same time, what happens and how do you handle that? And so I'll cover that in my demo. And with that, let's actually jump into our sort of first lap around mobile services, talking about how to store data and talking about briefly about how to do offline. Great. So with everything Azure related, the first place you start is the Azure portal. And on the left-hand side, we have the mobile services tab that lets you see all the different mobile services in your subscription. If you want to create a new one, you just hit the new button, hit create, give it a name. And then it asks you to either pick an existing SQL database or create a new one. You still have to go through this step, even if you want to use any of the other data stores, but you can delete the database later if you're not using it. So in this case, I'll use an existing database. This is where we expose that choice between the JavaScript and the .NET programming model. So today, you know, we're all .NET developers in the room here, so I'll pick .NET. And if you're not a .NET developer, you can still stay. But come find me after the talk, and I'll show you how to do this in Node.js as well. So we'll pick .NET. And then on the next screen, it's going to ask me to configure which database to use. And in this case, I have one already. I can go and put in my database user here, hit OK. And within 30 seconds to a minute, I'll have a backend and a service provisioned for me and configured to talk to each other. So that's some of the convenience that mobile services provides. Actually, I already have a service created here, and it's pretty much blank. It doesn't have much in it. And this is sort of what we call our quick start experience. So it lets you get started in three easy steps on your favorite platform of choice. So let's say we're doing Windows. I want to create a new app. It tells me, as a first step, download the tools, get Visual Studio, which you probably already have. The second step is download a local project, so you can try it out locally and play with it. And the third step is publish your service and update your client to now talk to the service that's hosted in Azure. So these are three very easy steps. You hit download, it's going to give you a little zip file that has the project already in there. If you want to use one of the other platforms, of course you can. So iOS, Android, HTML, Xamarin. It's the same sort of guided experience for all these platforms, and they all give you this starter project. If we explore some of the other tabs here, we have support for scheduled jobs. So if you want to write, you know, something that goes and cleans up your database on a timer, you have a lot of choices in Azure. You know, you have, you know, you can use the cron service in Azure. Scheduler is probably the easiest for mobile scenarios. We have our push tab for push notifications related settings, identity for authentication related settings. The scale tab is where you scale your mobile service. And this is something that's pretty cool. We have different tiers here. So the free tier is free. So if you sign up for Azure, you can actually create one of these without paying anything. And there's also a free SQL database option. So you can actually start playing around with it without paying anything. I probably should be in the basic tier here, since I'm demoing in front of all of you. We have basically the basic and standard tier that correspond to a number of API calls that your service is receiving. And then right down here, I can actually, if I turn on, let's say, the basic tier, I can configure auto-scaling. So I can say, based on the number of API calls, scale between 1 and 4 basic instances. So this lets you sort of set it up and forget about it, and it's going to scale elastically as demand for your mobile app grows. So if you make it to the front page of Slashdot or, you know, one of these sites, you don't have to worry for a little bit. For a couple of hours, you'll be fine. And then you probably have to come back here again. But we do also have really good monitoring, so you can actually set up email alerts for certain things. So if CPU starts running high or SQL CPU starts running high, it can send you an email. And then you know that you have to come back to the portal and start tweaking things. Great. So that's the portal. Now, let's go back to that starter project here. So I actually canceled it because of I've already downloaded it here. And this is what I get by default when I open that project. So I get a Windows Universal app because I picked Windows. I get a Windows Universal app, and that's those top three projects, you know, the Windows Phone bit, the Windows Store bit, and the bit that's shared between the two. And then I get my service code at the bottom. And that's a web API project. If you've done any web API development, this should look very familiar. And we've tried to only highlight sort of the very basic things you need here. So we have our to-do item. The idea for this example is that it's a to-do list, but you can easily change it to whatever you like. And then we have a controller that exposes that to-do item to the client app. So these two are probably the two files that you're going to end up looking. Oops, you're going to end up looking at in the server project. So if I open the to-do item, it's very simple. It has a text and a complete property. And then the controller, again, is pretty simple. It has sort of a canonical, you know, read, update, delete methods that you're familiar with. So if you're a web API developer, this should be pretty familiar. Great. So if I actually go ahead and set this project as my startup here, I can actually try it out right in the browser. So we provide this little documentation page that tells you about the APIs that the service is exposing. And here's the most important feature, is the smiley face. So then you can go through and sort of see the APIs that your service is exposing to the mobile app. And if you click into an individual API, we actually give you a help page that shows sort of the payload that it expects and the information about it. If I actually had written documentation on my API, it would appear here. And we even give you a little test client so I can actually try it out right in the browser. So if I send a request here for all my to-do items, it'll get back to me with, you know, just a few. I think I have 2, first item, second item. So this is that simple JSON shape on the wire that we talked about earlier. But this is not how you're going to end up using this, right? Ultimately, what you want to do is build a client app. So these apps are already configured to talk to the service. So if I go, let's open the shared project first. In the app.xaml.cs, we already have our SDK referenced here. So the mobile service client comes from our SDK, which is available on NuGet. And we have two constructors, one to talk to the local version and one to talk to the version in Azure once you publish it. So once you publish it, you can go and comment this out. Or comment this out and comment this back in, and then use that. Now, the other file, the main page, and if you're an MVVM expert, you're going to laugh at us a little bit. We should probably rewrite this to use MVVM at some point. But here's where you actually start using those to-do items. So I have a to-do items table. I call get table on the mobile service object I just instantiated. And then inside the table, it's a table of to-do item. I can now start doing operations. I can insert one by calling insert async. I can read, and I can actually write link queries here. So if you're familiar with link, it's a very nice fluent way to query a data store. And this runs on the server. The query gets serialized and sent over. So in this case, I'm returning all the to-do items that are not completed. I can update by calling update, and then I can insert a new one. I think I already covered all of them. There's a delete some. I don't think this app supports deleting, but you get the idea. So the SDK is a very simple layer over storing data in the cloud. So if I run the app, let's say we run the Windows, I think this is the Windows Store version. It pops right up. Again, the UI is not amazing, but you get the idea. So it will give me on the right side those two items you saw in the web service, and I can add a third item, save it in here. I can complete an item, it disappears from the list, and if I restart the app, that data was written straight to my service, so it's nothing's stored locally. So this was just a very quick introduction. So if you'd never heard about mobile services, and now you probably have some idea at least about what it does. So this app was purely online. This app, all the changes I would make would get written directly into the back end. The back end was local right now, but I'll show you later how to publish it as well. So you can think of it as none of the data was local to the app. It was in the service, and the service can be in Azure. It can get published very easily. Now let's go and talk about how do we implement offline. So I actually have the exact same service project with the exact same to-do item and the exact same controller. But now we're using the offline sync capability in the client projects. So the service is literally exactly the same as what you saw before. Let's actually run the client project to give you an idea of what this does. It's going to look similar, but we've modified it slightly so I can showcase some of the features of offline. So when I first launch it, you'll notice there's a difference in behavior already. Those items that were in the back end didn't pop up automatically because, remember, this is going against a local data store, an offline data store. So it's not talking to Azure until you tell it to. So right now in the local database, there's nothing. The first thing to do is do a pull. So the pull will then go and populate the local data store with items from Azure. So let me check a few settings here, just to make sure it's pointing to the right service. And just make sure the service is up. I have the right URL. Just do a little bit of ad hoc debugging. So our pull failed for some reason, so let's go and find out. So first, let's check whether the service API is returning the data we expect. Maybe there's a problem in the service. So we'll go through that little test client I showed you earlier to make sure it's actually returning items. And it is. So the problem is not in the service. So going back to the client project, I want to make sure I have a brand new local DB store. It's not full of old items or anything like that. And I want to make sure the URL here that I'm using is actually correct. Let's try to run it again. OK, well, I don't know what happened. But there we are. Here are two items. Now let's go ahead and try and simulate a conflict here. Let's try and actually break this. So I'm going to go into my service, and I'll actually go and modify an item, and then I'll modify it in the app as well to create a conflict. So if I go back into Visual Studio here, I can use the Server Explorer, and it'll actually go. It will let me go inside the table that the database is using. Oops, I think I picked the wrong thing here. We want show data. Great, so here are these items. It's a little bit small, but the same sort of item. Second item, first item, third. So let's go and take third and change it to something else. Let's change it to fourth. All right, so now we have a change on the server side. And this could be if you have two devices modifying the data. I don't want to open two devices here, but you get the idea, right? Someone else modified the data. And let's go and take that same third item and change it to fifth here. So now we have a conflict. And the app doesn't know who won and who should win in this case. So if I try to do a push or to commit my local changes to the cloud, it's telling me, oh, wait, hold on, there's a conflict. Something happened. And we use this version, this idea of a version column for every entry. We maintain a version. So we know if the version that's in the cloud is different from what you had locally, we raise a conflict. So this is optimistic concurrency. If you've done databases, you've probably seen this before. Here it lets me basically pick. It's like, okay, well, how do you want to resolve the conflict? And this is behavior that we implemented. You can have a default resolution strategy here if that's what you prefer. So if you have a behavior in mind, you know you want it to work exactly a certain way, maybe last write wins, so whoever updated it. We also have an updated at, so you can see who touched it last, and then maybe that always wins. But in this case, we just let the user pick. So I can pick the local version or the server version. Let's say I pick the server version. I can do a pull, and you see fifth was renamed back to fourth, because that's what the server had. So how did I implement this? Let's go into the actual project here. So before we talk about the conflict handling, let's go through that same main page file that I showed you in the simple case, in the online case, and see what has changed. The first thing you'll notice is we're actually using a different class here. Instead of mobile service table, we're using mobile service sync table. And the sync table was the offline version of the table API. And instead of calling get table here, you call get sync table, and that's how you get a reference to that. The rest of the code is actually quite similar. There's a little bit of initialization here where I specify the name of the local database. And then I can specify a conflict handler. In this particular case, I wrote one myself, and I'll show it to you. So, but there's this little initialization bit. But then if you look at, for example, inserting an item, that's pretty much the same as it was before. If you look at querying, again, I can write sort of these link-style queries when I pick the things that need to be synced down locally. If I want to update an item, it's probably... This is the querying. So this is where I'm querying the local data store. It's the same query you saw earlier. Updating an item is the same. So let's talk about what's different. So you saw that little initialization code. The other thing is you get a choice now to decide which items you bring down into the local data store, right? Because now there's the cloud, and then there's a sort of an intermediate place here. So in this particular case, here's this sort of pull query. So you can define another query to specify what gets brought down locally. And then... So that's the second bit that's different. The third bit that's different is the need to now do this push and pull, right? Because it doesn't just automatically write to the cloud. You have to explicitly tell it to push and to pull. So we have these buttons here, and ultimately it'll either call push or it'll do pull. I think I have a pull button somewhere else in the page. So that's sort of the basics of offline. Now let's talk about the conflict resolution. So that's that sync handler class I showed you earlier. So this is where that UI came from that asked me to resolve the conflict as the app user. So I can go and override this basically this execute table operation async method, and that's where I can handle all the conflicts. So I try to execute the operation, and if the operation fails, for whatever reason. It'll be, you know, it can, well, it can be for any of a number of reasons, but if it's a sync conflict, it'll either throw this mobile service conflict exception or this precondition failed. And then I can go ahead and handle it. And there's a bit of stuff here, but the important bit is if I want to keep the local version, I can just take the server value, stuff it into the item, change the item to an update, and that's how I basically tell the offline implementation, turn this insert into an update. Yes, I understand this item is now changed. I want to take the version that I had. The other case is if you want to actually take the server version and overwrite whatever you had locally. And in that case, you just return the server value, and our operation knows to actually use that locally. So that's how you sort of implement this conflict handling logic if you want to do it in the way that we did here with the user intervention. You can also have a policy here, like the choice between local version and server version came from that UI dialog. You can also have a default policy here that just does it based on some rule you define. So that's offline in a nutshell. I think I've spent enough time talking about data, so let's switch gears a little bit and talk about authentication. So this is something that all of us have to do. Basically, how do we sign in Facebook or Google or Microsoft account users into our app? Well, we could go and learn this OAuth dance, you know, ourselves. And the case in the different cases, it's slightly different. Every provider is a little bit different. It's standard, but not quite. So you could do this yourself. Or you can use the implementation that we already provide. So we've kind of gone through, figured out how it all works. We have tests in place. So, you know, why replicate this work if it's already there for you in Azure? And so the general flow works as follows. You have the device signing in to the authentication provider, let's say Google. And you can use two ways to sign in. One is the client flow through a device-specific SDK. So Google provides you an SDK that lets you log into the app. Or there's the what we call the server flow, in which case you can pop up a little web view that basically renders the Google login UI. And these are two approaches, and we'll talk about which one works best in which case. But that's sort of that first step. And that returns back an authentication token to the device, so now you know who the user is on the device. And then you can also send that token back to your backend, so then you can implement authorization logic in the backend. So you can say, only you can tag each item in the database with the user ID of the person that created it, and then when they try to read them, you just return the items that that they own. The app I showed you before, everybody can see everybody's data. So if you want to have any kind of realistic app, you need authorization in place to make sure people can only see their own stuff. So that's all implemented. And then one interesting bit is once you have the authentication token on the service, you can actually go and access the graph that's protected by each of these auth providers. So in the case of Facebook, I can actually go and look at the person's pictures or post on their timeline from within the service's backend, which is pretty cool. If you want to build an app that, let's say, post something to my timeline on Facebook, this graph access with the authentication token is how you would do that. As far as the providers, we support all the social providers, but we also support AAD, like I mentioned, for enterprise scenarios. And we also support the ability to write a custom provider. So you can plug in your own auth provider if you want to support an additional one to the ones we already support. And so I wanted to show you two things in my demo here. One is support for these client flows, and the client flows are the ones that use the SDK. And they provide this much slicker login experience than the web view. So I'll demo that. And I'll also demo our support for custom auth providers. You didn't see LinkedIn up on that slide, but we just recently announced a custom auth, and we have a reference implementation for LinkedIn. So I'll show that to you guys as well. So first, let's look at the server project here. And again, it's the very simple starter sort of thing with the to-do item and the to-do item controller. We haven't added anything interesting there. We have added something interesting to our config here. You'll notice I have this one call adding this LinkedIn login provider. And the LinkedIn login provider is something I implemented in my project here. And if we go through the code, it's not the simplest extensibility point, so I I encourage you to look at our reference implementation if you're going to do this yourself. But there's a few steps here. The first step is configuring the middleware. So that's the layer that actually does the token handling. And in this case, we actually use something that's already available. So it's actually available as part of the Owen package. So that's, I don't know if you've heard of Owen, but it's basically a set of HTTP middlewares that are already out there. And somebody's already implemented LinkedIn. So very easy to plug that in. And you tell it basically where does it get these two pieces of information that it needs to be able to complete the flow. You give it the client ID and the client secret. And in this case, we store these as app settings in the mobile service. They're not hard-coded. So if I go to that mobile service in the portal, and I go to the configure tab here, you'll see I've actually defined two settings with these values. So this is a nice way that you don't end up hard-coding it. When you're doing local development, you can put the values in webconfig, and then when you deploy to Azure, you can actually put them in the portal. Let's try this again. Let's just refresh the browser. Basically configuring the settings here, and this is the flow you do for custom auth, right? Because this is something I wrote. But for the baked-in providers, we actually have the identity tab, which is a first-class place where we have the fields for each of the supported providers. So in this case, I'm doing it the custom way, but normally you'd just be using the identity tab to do this. So down here, here's those two properties, LinkedIn client ID, LinkedIn client secret. And this is so that the mobile service, so the LinkedIn backend can trust the mobile service by sharing these secrets. You sort of enable a trust relationship between the two. So then LinkedIn now feels comfortable issuing tokens for the mobile service. And then the identity tab is where I configure all the other providers. So we have Microsoft account. You've noticed I've configured Facebook already. And I'll show you Facebook later. It's using the same service, so I'm using both LinkedIn and Facebook at the same time. Great. So back to the project in VS. We configure the middleware with the right settings here. And then there's a little bit of magic here to basically take the and this is where if someone really knows OAuth here, they can help me. But we take the actual claim that's present in the token itself, and we convert it to an object that we pass to you as the developer. So it's kind of like a little bit of a programming model. It's a little bit of programming model we layer on top of the raw OAuth stuff that's part of the login flow to make it easier. So in this case, we just expose access tokens, so you don't have to figure out how to fish it out from the right claim. So just a little bit of wrapping we do to make your life easier. I mean, that's pretty much it. This is up on the in the blog link that I shared, and you'll get the slides so you can play with it yourself. So that's the service. So I've configured LinkedIn through this custom flow, and I've also configured Facebook just by pasting in those two settings in the portal. And the Facebook settings, I forgot to mention where they actually came from. I had to create, and same for the LinkedIn settings, actually. So both of these settings actually came from Facebook and from LinkedIn. So before I can enable log in with these providers, I have to go and register with the provider. So in this case, I have an app in Facebook, and that's where this app ID and app secret came from. Same for LinkedIn. So my service is now configured. Let's see how do we configure our app. And I thought I would actually mix it up here. Oh, sorry. Before we go to the app, there's one last bit here. We've configured login, but we haven't actually protected anything without login. We have to actually go and tell our service, well, turn on authentication for something. So I've gone to the table controller, and I've added this one attribute here called authorize level. And I'm telling it only allow authenticated users. So that's how I basically turn on very coarse grain authorization. I can apply this down to the method level. And inside the method level, I can reason. I can do even more fine-grained stuff. I can actually pick which user has authorization to access which resources. This is just very coarse-grained, saying the entire API is off-limits unless you're logged in. So that's already set up. And I've already published it to Azure. Let's go and look at the client app. So in this case, I thought I'd actually do Android, just because just for fun, basically, because we support more than Windows, and I wanted to show you how to do it in Android. And I'm not going to walk through the full usage of the SDK, but if you understood the C# SDK when I showed you in the client app, it's very much the same ideas. We have a mobile service table, mobile service client. You could just literally translate in your brain between Java and C#. The interesting bit here is that before calling refresh, before pulling down the server data, I added this authenticate method. And my first implementation of authenticate is just right down at the bottom here. It actually doesn't do any authentication at all. It just tries to do what the app already did before, which is just give me the data. And this will fail, right, because we've turned on authentication for our service. So let's try it in the Android emulator. And this sometimes works well. Sometimes it blue screens my machine. So we'll see which way how it's feeling today. So first call, I haven't done anything to log the user in. So it's telling me, nope, you can't get the data. Great, that's what we expected. Now, let's go and actually implement the support for LinkedIn. So can comment out this method here. And you notice I'm calling login and passing LinkedIn as the argument. So that's how I tell it from all the different providers it knows on the server which one to use. And if I was using Facebook, I could pass Facebook here. So the fact that it's a custom provider, the client doesn't really care. The client is just doing the same thing. And whether it's a built-in provider or a custom one, you can do it the same way. And then when it's completed, I check whether there's any errors. This is how you do async in Android, so that's probably a little bit different from C#. There's no async and await here. But I just check if this exception is null, and if the exception is null, then I know authentication succeeded. And I can actually get the user ID from within the token and get, it's kind of like a GUID, basically. It's the GUID that LinkedIn uses to identify me uniquely. So let's try this flow. So now the first thing it's going to do before trying to get the data is it's actually going to call that login method. And the login method is going to call out to my custom middleware that I published in my service, which redirects it to LinkedIn. So now LinkedIn is asking me to log in here. Now, keep in mind the experience here. We're sort of it looks pretty good, but it's still in a browser window that's hosted inside my app. So I can go ahead and type in my LinkedIn credentials here. And yeah, you are seeing these black squares. I have no idea what that's about. And I think it's going to try to show you all my passwords, so I'll do this. All right, so we say sign in and allow. That's going to complete the authentication process and give me back my user ID. So I can now use this to tag data on the server and authorize it just to my individual user. And what's more is you see that it actually brought back the items this time, right? Because it tried the call to refresh right after I was logged in. And the login call already is attaching that token and proving that I'm actually authenticated. So that was LinkedIn. Now, notice how easy this code was, right? It was literally calling login, telling it which provider, and then handling the result, okay? Now let's do the client flow. So that's the flow that's nicer, can do things like single sign-on a lot better, but it requires quite a bit more code. So we'll comment this out. And we'll go to the Facebook method. And so first, to be able to even use this this Facebook flow, I actually had to add a reference, I don't know if you see here, to the Facebook SDK to my project. So Facebook provides a bunch of components for logging customers in. And I also had to install the Facebook app on my actual Android emulator. So in here, I had to sideload the Facebook app, because that's used as sort of the source of my identity. That's how all these apps can sign me in, is they each actually check with the Facebook app and ask it, oh, is the user signed in? Okay. And if Facebook app says that I am signed in, then they'll authorize me to use the app. So I had to go through a bunch of setup steps already to get this going. And then now I'm using Facebook's programming model here. So I'm saying, OK, open a session. And then once the session is open, I can then call mobile services and give it the token from Facebook. You notice I construct a little JSON blob, and I pass it to that same login method. I say Facebook is the provider, and I pass that body. So it's kind of two separate pieces talking to each other. The Facebook thing gives me the token, and then I send the token to the service. Ultimately, what LinkedIn was doing and what this is doing is accomplishing the same flow, if you think back to that diagram, is getting my identity to the client and also giving it to the server. And then the mobile services part here is going to be the same. So when it completes, I check for an error. And if the, you know, if the error is null, I can get the user ID. So let's go ahead and run this version. Now, the user experience is going to be slightly different this time, and arguably much better. So it's trying to, oh, all right. Let me log out of Facebook first. Oh, I am logged out. OK, let me reinstall, because I didn't implement support for logging out here yet. So I'll just uninstall my app and try it again. All right, well, how do I get it to log out? Interesting. Well, you see it's working. yeah, I haven't seen this issue before. Interesting. So somehow it's caching my state. Maybe I need to do something with the Facebook app. I'm pretty sure I'm logged out of the Facebook app, though. That's interesting. Am I logged into Facebook in the browser? Probably not. Anyway, let's move on in the interest of time. But come to me after. The experience that you were supposed to see, it actually, if it's logged out, it'll actually bring up the Facebook app and ask me to sign into the Facebook app. And then it'll sort of shift that to the background, and then it will authenticate me in my app. And I don't know, for some reason, it's caching. Maybe the emulator has a way of, maybe if I restart the emulator, it'll work. But I'm not going to waste your time with it. And I'll be at the booth later, so you can come, and I'll have it sorted out by then. Great. So we covered authentication. The last thing I wanted to talk about is push notifications, really briefly. And I'm not going to do a full demo, but just to give you an idea of what the service does and how to use it. Notification hubs, it's something that's available in Azure. And again, like I mentioned at the beginning, the idea is it makes it easier to target all the different notification services. So your device registers with Apple. And then instead of you having to manage that registration yourself, in case it expires, in case it gets deactivated, in case you get throttled, you don't have to handle all these cases yourself. You can just give it to the notification hub backend, and it knows how to do all these things. And it knows how to do them for all the providers, and it knows how to do them at scale, which is critical. If you want to send a million notifications yourself, you're sending a million messages to each of these services. With notification hubs, you can send it a single message, and it will actually fan out in a parallel way with this front end that they have with like a gazillion VMs sitting somewhere, and it'll actually deliver it all in sort of nearly at the same time, within a couple of seconds or a couple of minutes. Which, if you try to do this yourself, you'd have to be running this scaled-out parallel front-end to deliver all these notifications. And there's no doesn't make any sense for you to run that yourself. Just use what's on Azure. There's a lot of free notification hub pushes. I think up to a million pushes included for free with your mobile service. It supports the idea of tagging. So it actually has once you register a channel, once you register a device, you can actually apply a tag or a series of tags to it. And the tags can be as descriptive as the user ID. So if you want to be able to send a notification to an individual user, you can do that. You can apply a broad tag, let's say, to a whole segment of people who like soccer. And then you can write tag expressions when you're sending stuff. So you can say, I want to fire this person plus everybody who's subscribed to updates about the lunch menu, right? You can do these tag expressions to accomplish pretty complex stuff in your notification hub. I have another demo for that, and I can show it later. I had to make some trade-offs in this talk, so I want to move on to sort of talking about, why notification. I think I covered all these things. I want to talk a little bit about sort of the customer success we've seen with one of our customers, Orange Tribes. So Orange Tribes, they're a Dutch company. They're based in Amsterdam, and they're a consultancy, but they also do sort of development on the side, basically their pet projects. And so they developed Sleeve Music, which is a way to discover new artists as well as keep in touch with your favorite artists that you have. And this is sort of some of the growth numbers they've seen recently. So they have, a total of about a quarter of a million downloads to date. Over a pretty steep curve, and they're using mobile services today. So it just kind of gives you an idea of the kind of scale you can reach if you use mobile services. If you look at sort of some of their more recent data, you can see that there's actually a huge acceleration right now happening in the last month in the India and Brazil markets. So in emerging markets, they're actually seeing a tremendous growth. And they're asking me, do you know if that's because of Windows Phone growth in those countries or Android growth? And I think it has to be that. There's no reason why they magically became more popular in one geography over another. But this is some of the sort of engagement numbers they're seeing with their current app. And so when they went ahead and built that with Azure, let's be honest about it. I mean, it's a quarter of a million users, so it's not the to-do list that you saw. It's slightly more involved than that. And so they had to tweak this out-of-the-box architecture we gave them to make it a little bit more realistic. So they still use the mobile service, and they still use the mobile app. They're currently on Windows Phone, and they're also on iOS and coming to Android soon. So that's that top left corner. That's exactly the out-of-the-box components I showed you. They also have a website running WordPress, and so for that they're using our JavaScript SDK, another piece that's out of the box. Now, in the middle here is where their architecture gets a little bit more interesting. They have this huge ingestion pipeline because they need to be able to consume the data for all the artists that people follow. So they use MusicBrainz for the bio, and they use SoundCloud to get their latest tracks. So they're running a worker role to go and ingest all that data and normalize it to some representation that their mobile service can then send to the clients. Now, the first thing they tried was the worker role writing straight to SQL. And then the mobile service talking straight to SQL. And that's kind of the configuration we set you up with. And that started falling over pretty quickly once they hit, like, in the hundreds of thousands of users. Unless they want to pay a lot of money for a very expensive SQL instance, the architecture wasn't really scaling for them. So we chatted, and then we brought in our consulting team as well. And so what ended up happening is, our customer advisory team. And what ended up happening is we said, well, why don't you, as you're writing stuff to SQL, also write through some of the stuff that most of your customers access and that's pretty stable and read-only. Why don't you write that through to Azure Storage as well? So then the first time your app loads, it's going to hit table storage or Redis, depending on the shape of the data. So the first calls that everybody does when they open the app actually don't go against SQL directly. They go against these more scaled out stores. If you start doing detailed stuff inside the app, if you start looking around or if you favorite an artist, then of course it'll go to SQL, right? But they try to offload their read-only and most popular queries into these static stores. So that's some good learnings from them, how they actually adapted mobile service to help it scale as their demand grew. And they didn't have to use anything external to Azure. All these services were available to them on Azure. This is some of the learnings straight from their CTO. They really enjoyed the ability to rapidly develop. So they got themselves, they're almost too successful. They're able to get so far with mobile services that then scale became an issue really, really quickly, which is a good problem to have. Then they, in the beginning, they didn't handle query optimization very well. So their SQL instance in the beginning, they actually didn't have indices on all the right things, and they hadn't gone through the SQL query optimizer. There's a really cool tool that tells you if you've written a really expensive query, so you know, and you can try and optimize it. So they hadn't taken advantage of these tools to optimize their SQL. So that's something that they did and saw some improvements there. The SQL slowness was actually causing some instability in their mobile service as well, because SQL was slowing down. It was eating up all these TCP ports. So it was kind of a multi... The problem had multiple different manifestations, but the root cause was the fact that they were just trying to do too many queries with SQL. They introduced caching, and then they actually beefed up the logging. So in addition to what we provide, they added extra logging to be able to know what's happening. They're very much a happy customer, but they sort of went through some learnings as they grew. And we have a full case study coming out on them as well with much more information. So I mentioned three big parts of the life cycles, the development stage, and that's sort of this first part we talked about. The second stage is debugging it. And then if I don't run out of time, we'll do the third stage, which is actually engaging customers. So when it comes to debugging, we have a few capabilities. So for mobile services, we have the same attach debugger gesture that you're familiar with from websites. So you can actually attach your Visual Studio instance to the mobile service running right in the cloud. And that's good for simple debugging because, you know, you are connecting to a live instance. But if you want to do more passive debugging, just sort of monitoring what's happening, monitoring the volume of errors, you can bring in third-party tools such as Application Insights and New Relic. And I have sort of some of the setup steps for how to configure New Relic here. Let me show you an example of actually running New Relic with mobile services. And if you're not familiar with New Relic, it's basically a suite of monitoring tools that lets you sort of correlate how your app is behaving with things on the wire, and it works both for client projects and for server projects. So let's head back to Visual Studio here. Let's see first how I instrumented my service. All I had to do is add a NuGet package. So I added this newrelic.azure.websites package. That's all I had to do in my code. Then I went and published that. In the portal, I had to paste a bunch of settings. And that was the blob of settings you saw on the slide. And we're looking to make this better, actually providing a button here that you can click. So I have the settings already pre-configured here. And this license key, I actually didn't have to go and sign up separately for New Relic. I actually added it via the Azure Store. So the Azure Store lets me add components from partners, such as New Relic, without having to set up a separate billing relationship. So I actually was able to add a free New Relic version here to the store, and then it gave me that license key I can then use with my service. So that's how I instrumented my service project. I added the NuGet package. I added New Relic from the store. I copied the config settings over. In my client app, so I did it in Android as well. All I had to do is add their SDK, basically, which is a jar file in this case. And there's maybe one line of initialization code near the beginning of the app telling it, okay, this is the New Relic project you want to be talking to. So let me actually launch this in the emulator, and then we'll head to the New Relic portal. So inside the New Relic extension here, there's a link to go and manage. So if I just press that, it actually pops me straight into the New Relic portal without having to sign in. So it sort of has my Azure identity, and it's sharing that between the two. So let's go and actually generate. Right now, I'm looking at the services backend here, and I can actually go ahead and generate some load just by, you know, sort of hitting refresh in my app like crazy. And it takes a couple seconds for it to trickle through. So we might sit here for a couple of seconds. The other thing is the client analytics show up on this mobile tab here. So here's my actual client app, and so I can get both the telemetry from the client and the server in the same place. So as you see here, it's kind of showing me, okay, well, when I started this talk, I did a little bit of a test on stage here. So that's some of the data, and this is when I was practicing this morning or last night, I think. it's around, you can see how late I was up last night. So the data, and it's going to trickle in. I mean, it takes a few minutes for it to get ingested, but it shows me some real cool stuff. It can show me which activities I'm spending time on in the app itself. It can tell me how the different HTTP requests I'm doing to my service, how they're doing, and which ones are taking a long time. So that's usually a great place to get started here, just to highlight any problems. Once I know which HTTP requests to my mobile service are taking longer, I can switch over to the service project here. And that gives me a lot more insight about what my service is doing for different queries that it's receiving. One thing I wish would show up here is it's actually able to give me an ordered list of all my most expensive transactions. So most expensive SQL queries, for example. This takes a little bit of time, so maybe we'll come back to it. But it should populate here, and it sort of gives you a breakdown of how much time you're spending in your actual code versus how much time you're spending in SQL as well. Lets you figure out sort of some of that information, some of that query profiling stuff, as well as just which up there it is. So it started popping up, and you notice in these queries, I'm listing all these items, and I'm spending a little bit of time in CLR, but most of the time in the database. So if you see here you're spending an inordinate amount of time in your database, that's a good sign that you need to go and optimize that query. Great. I'm almost at time here. So I'm going to very quickly go through the last major area that I wanted to cover. And we'll probably skip the demo, but I have an awesome video you guys can watch. So engaging your users, right? So once you're in the store, your work isn't done, right? At that point, you want to start optimizing, and you want to start measuring, and you want to start understanding what's happening to your app users, right? And why are they using the app? And if they're not, how do we get them to use it, right? Once they've downloaded the app, that's only half the battle, right? Keeping them engaged, it's actually much cheaper to bring your existing users who've already installed the app to use the app rather than to go and buy new users through ads. So we have a lot of great engagement tools here. This is a recent acquisition that Microsoft did. And the company is called Captain. They're actually based in Paris. And this is a quick video of what their product does.
All right, you've published an app. So now what? You have no clue if it's used often or simply gets forgotten. To keep your users interested, you start spamming them with push notifications. However, those could get very annoying, and users might even delete your app. You decide to get an analytics tool. Well, now you have loads of data, but you still need to set up campaigns for every possible situation and send it to every platform separately. That just takes forever. Isn't there a better way to keep your users interested? Boom! Introducing Captain. Captain is a platform that combines analytics with push notifications and in-app messaging campaigns. It monitors the activity in real time, like what pages are visited, when, and where. But it actually goes way beyond that. You can ask any question, like after how many visits a user is most likely to post a review or buy something. With this info, Captain helps you automate targeted campaigns that work on every platform and any device with an internet connection, even a smart TV. Finally, Captain also recognizes user segments for you. For example, the ones that are losing interest. You can directly send something really cool to win them over again. Awesome! Captain, pilot your apps.
All right. It's a very energizing video. I can say that. Oh. So just a quick summary, ability to measure, segment, and engage different parts of your audience without spamming them too much and without frustrating them. And so with that, I'm actually pretty much done. I was going to do a demo of Captain, but I think you get the idea. I want to talk briefly about the roadmap for mobile services and kind of some of the things we've invested in recently and some of the things we're going to invest in over the next 6 to 12 months. So recently, we made some updates to our Visual Studio support. So now you can actually, when you create, we have a project template for the service project, and you can actually go and create an environment in the cloud right when you create your project. So it kind of saves you time from having to go in the portal and do it there. So that's a great improvement. The client auth flows, which I mentioned, Gives you a nice single sign-on in case too eager in my demo. And then, you know, we've spent a lot of time actually tuning our internal operational agility, the ability to ship not just every couple of weeks, but to ship features on demand. So hopefully you'll be able to see, as customers, you'll see the upside of that sort of a much more agile team. Between the time you talk to us with given customer need and the time we see it in production, you see it in production, we try to accelerate that loop for you internally. Near term, we plan to bring offline sync to general availability. So what you saw today is a preview. We're planning to GA that pretty soon. And then sort of in the medium term, we plan to bring some of the features that Azure Websites has to mobile services, things like staging slots, backup restore. We're investing, of course, in our Visual Studio tooling. We're continuing to improve that. The new Azure portal currently doesn't have mobile services. If you've seen it, there's one that's looking very Metro style. So that one, we're bringing mobile services, or I should say modern, or whatever it is. So we're bringing mobile services into that portal. So that's sort of the investments we're making over the medium term. And with that, I'm pretty much done. I did want to save time for questions, even though I have still more content I could go through. Some of the sessions you might be interested in. I mentioned the enterprise story for mobile services. That's actually tomorrow, so you can go and check out that talk, as well as we have a talk on Friday focusing more deeply on the Visual Studio tooling for mobile services. I'll be available at at Ask the Experts tomorrow night from 6:30 to 8, so there's a mobile plus media table. And I'm actually at the booth today starting at 2:30 p.m. and tomorrow all afternoon. So if you have any questions or you want to see some of these demos again this afternoon or tomorrow afternoon, I'll be there. So happy to talk to all of you in more detail. Please remember to some resources at my email address. I'll leave the slide on. Please remember to submit an evaluation. Very important to us to make our talks better every year. So ultimately, it comes back to you. We don't want you to be bored and wasting your time. So do submit feedback. Let us know how we're doing. Feel free to reach out. And with that, I'll open it up to Q&A. Thank you.